Welcome to AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovations in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Statements made by guests on the podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the position of the society. A speaker's appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them, their views, or any entity they represent. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now, here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Diane Sanders-Cepeda.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of AMDA On The Go. Today, we're going to talk about RSV in the vaccination in older adults. And I'm very excited to be joined by Dr. Ann Falsey. Ann, would you please introduce yourself to the AMDA On The Go family?
Yeah, my name's Ann Falsey. I am an infectious disease researcher and clinician, and I've been working at the University of Rochester for many years and very interested in RSV in older adults.
That is very exciting to have you, Ann. I think when we were looking at talking about this, I was informed that we have a vaccine enthusiast, and I'm really very much interested in understanding what we need to be doing with RSV as it comes to our post-acute long-term care communities and facilities. So I want to start with asking you to provide us an overview of the state of the state as it comes to RSV in the older adult, older vulnerable population.
Sure. I think a good place to start is just by outlining the virus and the burden of disease. I think most of the listeners are familiar with RSV, but even so, many people tend to still think of it as primarily a pathogen in young children. And it turns out if you actually test for RSV in adults and older adults, it's actually quite common. It's kind of a fussy virus and sometimes hard to recover. But if you test it with the proper tools, you will find it. And it causes some pretty significant illness in certain groups of adults. And so if you're a young, healthy adult, you really just get a nasty cold or a bronchitis usually. But if you're older, and particularly if you have any underlying heart or lung problems, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, in addition, physical frailty, those are the folks that really get into trouble with RSV. And even in that group, it can cause anything from a cold to pneumonia and respiratory failure. But it's really in the frail group that we see high rates of hospitalization and even death.
So the frail group, that's a lot of who we see in our facilities. I'm very curious about how we should be looking and preparing for this. I think that one of those is a big question, and we have had COVID, and we've had the flu, and we see all the challenges there. Can you start by explaining to us what the latest recommendations and guidance is for delivering RSV vaccinations in the older population?
Yeah, I guess I'll start by just describing the currently available vaccines to set the stage. So these vaccines have been in development for, you know, going on 60 years. And finally, we have some really good products. Pfizer and GSK are protein-based vaccines, much like the flu vaccine. And they did their clinical trials in people over the age of 60 and showed very convincingly that they prevented somewhere between 80 and 85% of lower respiratory tract illnesses. There's also that will be coming along, so might as well tell you about it now, is Moderna, who makes an RNA product, also completed their trials in people over the age of 60. And it looks really just as good as the Pfizer and the GSK vaccine. And it's expected that that will be licensed this spring, so available next fall. And these vaccines, when they went through the approval process with the FDA and then recommendations from the ACIP, it was recommended that people receive one dose of the RSV vaccine through shared decision making. And I think that that shared decision making has gotten some people a bit confused as to how to proceed. So would you like to discuss the shared decision making?
I would definitely like to discuss the shared decision making. I'm trying to envision what that means for if I have a person in the nursing facility, what does it mean for a shared decision making?
Yes. Well, ideally it would be that, if you were an older person living in the community, you would go to your doctor who knows your medical history very well, and you could sit and have a discussion on the risks and the benefits of the vaccine. When you are in a long-term care facility, you could still do that. Some people in long-term care certainly have capacity, but some do not. And then the discussion might be with the family. But it's even more complicated than that, that sometimes the decision is really the medical director of that specific facility who has to sort of weigh the evidence pro and con as to this is a beneficial thing for their population. They then make a decision, and a lot of institutions have an opt-out procedure for vaccines. So every institution is different. Some will make a recommendation, and still the personnel will contact either the subject themselves, the resident themselves, or their loved one who will help make the decisions for them. And you might ask, well, why do they not just recommend it? And I think that's where some of the recommending bodies, and particularly some of the medical directors, which is very pertinent to the AMDA audience, felt that the big clinical trials were basically pretty healthy people over the age of 60. They really did not include almost any people who are living in skilled nursing, and there were very few people over the age of 80. So they were reluctant to recommend it for their population.
Well, let me ask you, Anne. When we look at the data, we know that RSV is one of the reasons why we see every winter we see a high amount of ER visits and hospitalizations. And given what you said earlier about the frail population, we know that our nursing facility residents are at high risk. Is the hesitation, is that or like the same hesitation we were seeing around vaccine apathy and with COVID? I'm just curious because we know our population's not always, we're not always included in the studies, but we're still seeing this. So how do we talk and speak about this to the medical directors and clinicians in the facilities because this is impacting our residents?
Yeah, and so you're quite right that the skilled nursing in particular are the frailest of the frail, and the hospitalization rates per 100,000 are extremely high in that group. We also know that every winter it is brought into the institution despite everybody trying to be very careful with masking and telling people not to visit when they're sick. Many of the staff members are young people with young children, and they may not knowingly bring it in. So it happens every year, and people do end up in the hospital. And the lack of involvement of nursing home patients in the big RSV trials, as you very well stated, almost never are nursing home patients included in these big trials. And so I actually don't know what the specific reluctance was here, other than to say, I think it's probably likely the vaccines may not work quite as well as they do in healthy older people, but we expect that they will have some protective efficacy. And there's pretty good evidence that the duration of the protection is at least 2 years. So if there's any hesitancy regarding not knowing how often to vaccinate or what the exact benefit is, I think, the value of the vaccine versus the risk of any rare side effects greatly comes down on the side of going ahead with vaccination.
Yeah, we discuss more about those risk versus benefits.
Sure.
Yeah, let's dive into that.
Yeah, so in the big trials, there were rare cases of Guillain-Barré. And so there was one in the Pfizer trial, there was one in the GSK trial. No, actually, there were two in Pfizer. And so this is out of, trials of roughly 30,000. And so what you don't know is that a real but rare event, or is it simply the baseline? Because we know as people get older, the baseline rate of Guillain-Barré goes up. And so, it could be that it's 10 per million doses administered. But we also know that the rate of hospitalization in this group is somewhere around 500 per 100,000, and about 6% of those people will die in the hospital. So if you simply do risk benefit, the benefit of the vaccine strongly outweighs any potential risk. And all of life is risk benefit. So, I was telling one of my colleagues, I happily marched my 101-year-old dad down to the pharmacy to get his vaccine because the benefit of that vaccine were hugely outweighed by any potential side effects.
Well, that is definitely the tr a truth. Risk, there's always risk. I am very impressed that you took your father in to get the vaccination. I think that I was reading about there's a lot of angst and maybe a lack of information on why seniors and older adults should be getting this vaccination. As far as for us who are the clinicians serving in the facility, what should we be expressing to the resident as well as the family and the staff who may all have concern with yet another vaccination?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a really good point. I think people do have vaccine fatigue. They're just kind of tired of it. I would try to impress that it's a very unpleasant illness. I always tell people when I'm giving a lecture, it's a very snotty, phlegmy, wheezy illness. And, being short of breath is scary. And so I've spent my life doing not just vaccine studies, but epidemiologic studies. So I go around to anybody with RSV who's in the hospital, and sometimes I'm enrolling them in studies, but I've also actually recorded their stories after they're better, just to get their perspective. And the one thing they universally tell me is it was very frightening that they couldn't breathe. That's what really drives people into the hospital. And being short of breath is just scary.
Yeah, and it's not like COVID where we have a medicine directed to treat it, or even the flu where we have a medication directed to treat this, correct?
That's exactly right. We have no effective antivirals.
Yeah. And every patient who I've treated with RSV, all older. I've never, fortunately, didn't want to ever treat children. So only in my experience as a geriatrician, it is very difficult. We were always chasing what we thought was a COPD exacerbation, or we started therapy for pneumonia of that we thought was bacterial, and it's turning out that the person has RSV, and it's just a long trajectory of illness for our older adults.
Right. And you know, the average length of an illness in an older person living in the community is, I think it's 17 days. And you know, that's a more vigorous individual in the community. So these can be very protracted illnesses. People are very bothered by persistent cough. It just wears them out. So yeah, I mean, I think most of the people that I interview and I ask them, well, if there was a vaccine available to prevent this, would you want to take it? And they just are, oh my goodness, yes. I don't want to have this again.
Yeah, especially given that all of our every patient who I've ever cared for at the nurse facility, they didn't have one diagnosis or two diagnoses. There was a multitude of comorbidities that you were juggling, and you're juggling all that polypharmacy. One thing could just completely derail what you're doing.
Yes, I often think of these fragile individuals who are in a stable state, but they're really like a delicate house of cards. And you pull one card out with a, you know, what seemingly minor illness, and the whole thing comes tumbling down. So I really see that perspective as well.
So let me ask, as in your capacity with infectious disease and research and everything that you're doing, how do you get a facility to buy in to doing this in their buildings, to giving the RSV vaccination in the facility?
It really comes down to educating. And it really isn't just from the top down. I think that we need to do a better job of connecting with the CNAs because many of the residents, that's who they spend their day with, who they trust. And some educational sessions, but again, not just giving people statistics. And, you know, I've tried to make some of these videos publicly available, but just, you know, putting a face on the disease, trying to remind people, you know, remember Mrs. Jones who lived on the seventh floor, and maybe that's somebody people connect with and they know and they remember. Well, she had RSV and she went had to go to the hospital and she never quite recovered, you know, really trying to make it personal. So if you know some in people at the facility that had RSV, they can also become some spokespersons, you know, for that this was bad. You don't want it. If there's a vaccine, we should take it.
I know that when we talk about COVID and the flu, the coverage as far as Medicare coverage falls under Part B. But for RSV, this falls under Part D coverage. Do you think that leads to further hesitation in supporting the vaccinations in our facilities?
Well, I'm going to just acknowledge my own ignorance here in that my understanding of being Medicare Part D is that it has to be billed through the pharmacy. And so what exactly that means for a physician, it's covered, but how that complicates rolling out a vaccine program, I'm going to admit I don't know. And so what do we do about that? Well, we have to find out what it really means and then educate the facilities on how to provide this under the current Medicare Part D.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. And maybe if there are any consultant pharmacists listening in, that might be a conversation for another time because I am very curious about coverage while in the facilities. It is an interesting concept because most everything we have is Part B. So it's just a different source. So I'm very curious about that. I guess my question, and just trying to understand more about the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Did they give any specific recommendations for our population? And I think I asked this before, but what do we need to do? Where should we take the research to get those recommendations refined for our population?
Well, I listened to the sessions and, you know, the ACIP members, you know, really wanted more research in the specific populations that are at highest risk. So, apart from long-term care. Also, very fragile people with bad heart and lung disease, extremely elderly people. But honestly, I don't think you can ethically do those studies. We have some very good vaccines, and we know that they work. And so I don't know how you could sit in front of someone and say, I'm going to randomize you to the vaccine that we know works versus a placebo with the idea of, well, we're not sure how well it's going to work in your population, but we do think it's going to work. So we're going to randomize you to a placebo. So I don't think you can do that. And so you're left with effectiveness studies. And this is not a new problem. I mean, the same has been true with flu vaccine for many years. It's a recommendation in this country. And so you cannot do placebo-controlled trials. So when they come out with new products, such as high dose or different adjuvants, it always has to be compared to the standard vaccine. And we end up having, and then they also want to know, well, does it really prevent hospitalization and death? And fortunately, those are relatively infrequent. You know, in aggregate, there's a lot of people that get hospitalized and die, but the incidence is relatively low, so you need enormous studies. So rather than doing that, they do what's called effectiveness studies. So they take people who are being admitted to the hospital who you find have RSV, and they compare vaccination status between those who didn't have RSV, were hospitalized for something else, versus those being admitted with RSV. And so those are the kind of studies that we do. The CDC is very good at doing those kind of studies. So when they do hospitalization effectiveness studies, since somewhere between 10 to 20% of those people hospitalized, the adults, are from long-term care, they can look at that subpopulation and really show that it is effective, or maybe it's not effective. But I do think I'm a vaccine enthusiast, and so I have extremely high hopes that this vaccine will provide some benefit to the nursing home population.
Let me ask you this. The RSV season, I'm in Florida, so let me start by saying that we see RSV all year long in different waves, sometimes more or less. But we see it all year long. What is the typical season? Does it follow and mimic the flu season?
Does it generally, before COVID, it would start in the southern US. So in Florida, it probably would start in late August, and then it gradually moves up the country. And where I live in Rochester, New York, the peak of RSV illnesses would be January, February. Typically, it's a bit broader of a season than flu. So flu kind of comes in with a big blast, and there's a very rapid rise in cases. The epidemic is generally 6 to 8 weeks, and it starts to decline. Whereas RSV starts up, it's a little slower. It really starts chugging pretty good after Thanksgiving, and then, you know, with all the mixing around the holidays, it really starts to take off, and then there's a slower tail off. So it's a less dramatic season, but it usually is seasonal. Now, we definitely saw during COVID some strange disruptions in that the first summer that they loosened restrictions, there was a rather large epidemic that began in the summer, even in the north. And so, but it seems to be settling back into its fall to winter predilection.
So, if we're preparing our populations, when would be the best months to get them vaccinated for the with the RSV vaccine?
So it is effective for 2 years, but you know, you get probably the highest antibody titers in that first year. So my suggestion is, you know, in southern states where RSV begins early, it probably would, you know, late summer, maybe September, roll out your vaccine campaigns, maybe a little bit before flu. And then in the northern climes, you can wait a little bit longer. Maybe end of September, beginning of October. But you really want to have everybody fully vaccinated Certainly before Thanksgiving.
And if I'm trying to now competing with vaccines, like if there was a resident who needed all three, the flu, COVID, and the COVID booster, the flu shot, and RSV, when do I give which vaccine?
Well,
Thinking about.
with COVID, it's anybody's guess. It hasn't settled into a really discrete risk period. So, COVID, I think what we'll be waiting for is when they update the vaccine this coming fall with the latest circulating variants. And so, come fall or late summer, there's always a question of can I give all three at once? Well, if COVID's available and you have a facility that has very limited resources, and they say, you know what, we don't have the staff to do three different separate campaigns, then you can combine the vaccines. But if the thing is that they recommend these vaccines together because there's concern always with missed opportunities. So if you have somebody in your office and they want to get a vaccine, and you're not sure you'll ever see them again until, next spring, the idea is, well, let's vaccinate them now. In a skilled nursing facility, it's a captured population, so to speak. And so you really can roll them out at different times as long as you have the personnel to do it. If you want to give them simultaneously, you can. RSV and flu have been studied together and found to be non-inferior. That means they don't really interfere with the response to each one. It's interesting. They say that you can give flu and COVID together. It's based on not a lot of data, and that RSV has not really been studied with COVID, even though CDC says just go ahead and do it. So some people prefer to space them out partly because of side effects. I will say in the nursing home population, they tend not to have the reactogenicity that young people do. So I think that a medical director at an institution could make any of those decisions, that they could couple up a couple, and it just may depend on what's available when.
That makes sense. I think that there's a lot of opportunity for the medical director and I will say the entire clinical leadership in that facility to become the enthusiast of their buildings. It remind people of why we need to do this, what the risks are in not making sure our populations are kept safe.
I mean, I think you really do have to have a champion. We recently completed, and we're doing the laboratory work now, a study where we enrolled healthy older people in the community that would mirror the people in the trial, and then residents of skilled nursing facilities who are going to receive the RSV vaccine as standard of care. And we got consent to draw blood before and after so we can look at their antibody responses. And at one of the nursing homes, the infection prevention nurse was just a great vaccine enthusiast. And so she was a good proponent, and they got something like 80% of the nursing home vaccinated. And it was through her hard work and talking to families, and there was so it really matters if you've got somebody in the facility who, as you say, is an enthusiast or a champion.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity here. I'm thinking about how we partner with the CDC and our Moving Needles campaign. There's a lot of synergy with what we've done in getting the COVID vaccine out there, how we could educate and utilize our staff to become the educators and the enthusiasts. I love all of that. I think there's an opportunity here to do the same when it comes to the RSV vaccination. And there are questions that we definitely need to keep asking, but I'm truly grateful that you came on and had this conversation with us. It is really a great discussion.
Well, thank you. And I've recently attended the AMDA meeting in Texas. And as an infectious disease person, I listened to a lot of the sessions. Some were very applicable to what I do, and some were a little bit afar, but all of them were incredibly interesting. And I really applaud the folks that are working so hard to provide good care to this frail population.
Thank you. This is great. And I feel like we need to have more discussions. I'm going to find a pharmacist and we're going to all come back together and have another talk because I'm very curious about the coverage and how we just answer the questions that the administrators may have before they are even asked. I like to do those kind of things. So this has been really wonderful. Thank you, Anne.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thanks.
Bye.
Have a great day, everyone.
If you are a physician interested in obtaining ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, visit paltc.org/podcast.